The health and immigration policy known as Title 42 expired last Thursday. It was used during the COVID-19 pandemic to prevent migrants from entering into the United States. Border officials warned that the end of Title 42 could immediately lead to a big jump in the number of migrants at entry points on the U.S. border with Mexico that were already dangerously overcrowded. It's still early days, but so far that doesn't seem to be what happened. The top border policy official at the Department of Homeland Security says the number of migrants crossing into the U.S. illegally has suddenly dropped by roughly half. Just south of El Paso, Texas, the mayor of the Mexican city of Juarez said on Monday that their migrant shelter was at 30% capacity and, quote, everything is completely under control. But border officials say the conditions causing high levels of migration haven't changed, and lawsuits filed by liberals and conservatives could disrupt new border policies from the Biden administration. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your opinion of the nation's immigration system, especially at that southern border? What do you think we could be doing better? What questions do you have? There's a lot of moving parts here. Have you entered the United States across that border? Would you care to share your experience? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Aaron Barbato is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Aaron, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob.
Because this does get complicated, I want to do a little before and after comparison here. First of all, can you talk about what Title 42 was and what it meant for people trying to enter the country, especially those trying to claim asylum status?
Sure. Title 42 isn't actually an immigration law, but it allows, based on public health and welfare, the government to control the border in terms of for a health reason. So in March of 2020, I believe, President Trump enacted Title 42 to close the southern border to everyone, including people seeking asylum.
Now, that expired last week with the end of the COVID health emergency. The Biden administration has policies in place, some based on pre-COVID policies. What are the most important elements of what the White House has in place now?
So now with the end of Title 42, we look at our Title 8, which is covers aliens and nationality through the U.S. code. And that's normally what we're looking at. The laws haven't changed since 1980 in terms of people able to seek refuge or asylum in the U.S. The Biden administration recently very much changed some policies that will have a huge effect on people who are seeking asylum and the number of people that are even eligible to seek asylum on our southern border. There are also a lot of additional enforcement techniques that are going on at our border and even in Mexico and even as far south as Colombia near the Darien Gap. There are policies and programs that they're creating that are supposed to expand legal pathways for people to enter the U.S. so they don't have to make the dangerous journey. But many of them are not in action yet, and we're still waiting for those to be up and running.
Now, the difference, if someone is trying to enter the United States outside of a legal point of entry, without authorization, during Title 42, as I understand it, they might be quickly returned to Mexico or their country of origin. Now it seems things might be more stringent. They could be face a 5-year ban from trying to enter the country again. They could face criminal charges for repeatedly doing so. What is different from that perspective now?
Yeah, under Title 42, where we did see high levels of unauthorized entries, Border Patrol was able to return people to their home country without going through what's called the expedited removal process. But they weren't allowed to apply for asylum. But there also wasn't a consequence. There was no criminal or immigration consequences for being turned around under Title 42. So many people did it more than once because there were no consequences to it. And maybe they would be successful the second time. Now under Title 8, we look at what is called expedited removal. It's if you arrive at a port of entry or enter the United States without authorization and you don't have proper documents, you will be removed unless you can prove that you have a fear of return to your home country. Now, if you can't prove that, you could be deported. There could be additional criminal consequences for entering the United States unlawfully more than once. So there are a lot more dangers for people attempting to enter the United States numerous times.
We're talking to Aaron Barbato, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School, talking about a big change in the policies in force at the Mexico-U.S. border. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, with changes, if any, you would like to see. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Aaron, can you take us through the process? If I'm someone who is coming, say, from Central America, I want to cross in the United States. I want to make a claim of asylum. I want to try to do it right. I'm going to go through a recognized point of entry. What happens? What are the steps I go through at that point?
So if you're coming from a Central American country, let's say Honduras, you are going to pass through at least Guatemala and Mexico on your way to the southern border to attempt to apply for asylum. When people arrive near the southern border or in northern Mexico, there is now what's called a CBP-1 app, Custom Border Protection app, where you're supposed to apply for an appointment with CBP. Right now, it looks like they're allowing about 1,000 interviews a day, but the app is glitchy and you need to have high-speed internet in order to make the appointment. So a lot of people on the ground are having difficulties making this appointment. So that's going to be one very difficult process for that individual, for you coming from Honduras to apply for asylum. The other issue that you're going to face right now as the policy stands is what's similar to the former safe third country policy. So if you pass through a third country on your way to the southern border of the U.S., without applying for asylum in a different country first and being denied, you are not eligible for asylum in the U.S. So it's going to bar many, many people from even being eligible for asylum, even if they generally would have like a textbook claim. So people from Mexico who are seeking asylum, they won't pass through a third country because they're in Mexico next to the U.S. So they may be able to process for asylum, but everybody else, it will be extremely difficult, if not impossible.
What are the prospects for seeking asylum in Mexico? Is that more or less welcoming than applying for asylum in the United States?
You know, I don't know the intricacies of how things work in Mexico. It's, the asylum program is much newer and it has grown, but it's, from what I hear from my clients, it's never an option for them. Whether it's unavailable or they don't speak the same language or there isn't even a place to apply. So I don't think it's readily available for people to apply. And many of the people that are seeking asylum in the U.S. would face the same dangers in Mexico as they would in their home country.
Now, supposing I made it through that hurdle, I had applied for asylum in Mexico and could establish that at the border, then what? What kind of things do I have to successfully prove? Who do I prove it to make a potentially successful asylum claim?
So normally what happens, so if you apply for asylum in Mexico and you were denied, then you are attempting to go to the U.S. to apply for asylum, you would have to get an appointment on CBP-1 app or somehow present yourself to a CBP officer. Then there's a few, depending on who you are, you'll be treated in a different way. Most single adults traveling alone will process for asylum while in detention. But even to get into detention in the U.S., you would have to pass what's called your credible fear interview. This is an interview generally with an asylum officer to determine whether you have a likelihood of getting asylum while in the United States. This is not an easy bar to reach. But if you do pass your credible fear, proving that you have a fear of return to your home country based on your race, nationality, religion, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group, you may be able to enter the U.S., but be in a detention center while applying for asylum. That can be months. And these detention centers are carceral environments. If it's different for parents entering with children, it looks like they will be in detention for a little bit in CBP custody. And then if they pass their credible fear, they may be released from detention knowing that they need to appear in immigration court eventually. And some of these families will also be monitored by ankle devices and phone monitoring by immigration officials. So there's no family detention that's coming back. At least Biden has said that's not coming back, but there will be a sense of detention where people, freedom of movement will not be available in the US except in limited positions. And then an unaccompanied minor, there are specific processes for them as well.
Now, if my claim of asylum is denied, a big question all along is where am I deported to? And if I have it correct, Erin, it may vary from country to country, depending on where I'm from.
It does. We the U.S. can only deport people to countries that we have diplomatic relations with. And right now, we don't have those relations with Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. But it seems like Mexico has agreed to accept them. So that is kind of the US's workaround from, they can't deport them to their home country, but they can deport them to Mexico.
We're talking to Erin Barbeito, Director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. She's with us today for a look at the end of the Title 42 border policy and what things look like now with the Biden administration's current immigration enforcement rules. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of President Biden's immigration policy? What questions do you have about what's happening at the U.S.-Mexico border? How do you see immigration affecting us here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Erin Barbeito, director of the UW Law School Immigrant Justice Clinic, talking about what's happening on the U.S. border with Mexico, what's leading people to immigrate to the United States, what the process looks like after the end of Title 42, a health code that was used as an immigration law in effect. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about what goes into these immigration policy decisions, the process for someone seeking to enter into the United States? Are there changes you would like to see if you're someone who migrated to the United States? What do you want people to know about your experience? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll bring on a caller now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. So I guess what keeps coming to my mind is I'm wondering what would happen if all of a sudden we had to have a mass exodus out of the United States, if we were treated with such rough hands, you know, how that would work. And I don't really believe that the way this is being done is in accord with any type of religious text, because all of them say take care of the widow, take care of children, take care of the traveler in a foreign land. And we're all immigrants if we're not Native American. So it just makes me think.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Marcus, I think looking for some empathy for people seeking to cross the border, Erin, and having worked with people on their claims in some cases, can you talk about the sort of things that are, as Marcus suggests, leading them to have to leave their home country?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Marcus said is a lot of people are looking for empathy or for safety. And I think that's how our laws were created, that in certain situations, people deserve protection. And these new policies may decrease people from seeking asylum in the United States, but that doesn't mean that the harm that people are suffering decreases. So I think that's something that everyone needs to think about, and that as a country, we have in our laws, as well as morally, are able to protect certain people. And we've been trying to do that for years, but this is a very stringent law that's going to exclude a lot of people that otherwise would qualify for asylum.
Marcus, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Erin, you mentioned the stringency of this law. I know some groups that advocate for immigrants thought that President Biden would be less stringent, more welcoming than President Trump. Some complaining that they don't see as much difference. Can you compare the toughness, the stringency of Biden-era regulations that came into effect over the last week versus what we saw in the Trump era?
Yeah, I think it's fair commentary, especially towards this safe third country transit bar to asylum. But adding legal pathways through AON processing centers in Colombia and Guatemala, as well as a ways for people to sponsor individuals from certain countries, of mostly Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. I think those are steps in the right direction. I really want to lean into how we can reduce the harm that people suffer on their journey to seek asylum in the US. The harm that people face, especially if they're, you know, traveling on foot from the Darien Gap, the most dangerous passage in the world, to our southern border, it's extremely dangerous and run by many criminal organizations and gangs. So if we can get people here who are eligible without having them experience more persecution while they're seeking asylum, I think that's the right move in the right direction. But if everyone else who arrives at our southern border isn't eligible for asylum because they didn't apply for asylum in another country, that's not the way that that Biden would be expanding humanitarian government policies.
Let's go back to our callers. Charlie is with us in Fish Creek. Charlie, hi.
Hi, good morning. Good afternoon. Good morning. Hey, I was just thinking about the early days of the Trump administration when we had a Republican in the White House. We had Republicans dominating the House of Representatives, and the Republicans were controlling the Senate and a pretty Republican-based Supreme Court. If we really wanted to take care of immigration and put something forth that was lasting, it could have happened then. But I don't think that the political impetus is there to get that done, because it's a political football that can be kicked around every election cycle because it gets people out to vote. And if things look bad on the border, it rallies people. I'm not sure what you think about that, but I'll take the response off the air.
Charlie, thanks for the call. And yeah, you had mentioned, Aaron, it's been a long time since we've had significant changes in actual immigration law. We've been cobbling things together with various kinds of executive actions and court decisions. What do you think about Charlie's thoughts about why we haven't seen that kind of a reform in Congress?
Well, why we haven't seen a reform in Congress, I'm not quite sure. It seems that no one can agree on what to do, even with something as popular as something like the Dream Act to protect people with DACA. There's no movement on that. There's no movement on anything. And so what we are dealing with every few years is the executive taking action within their presumed powers to change policies in immigration. And it causes havoc within the systems in the US, as well as for misinformation and dangers to people who are seeking asylum, because it's very difficult to understand what the rules are because they've changed so substantially. And people seeking asylum are often on journeys for months or even years. And those policies change and can affect their lives and their eligibility to apply for asylum simply by a change in a policy by the administrator. It's a very difficult, or the executive. So it's very difficult for people working in this area, but certainly for people seeking protection in the U.S.
Charlie, thanks for that call. I want to focus in on something you mentioned earlier, Aaron, these regional migration hubs. U.S. officials say they plan to open, I think, around 100 of these migration centers in countries including Colombia and Guatemala and elsewhere. From what you're looking at, do we know what role they'll have in immigration policy?
So it's my understanding that these, so one thing in our immigration system, there's a difference between someone seeking an asylee status and a refugee status. If someone receives a refugee status outside of the United States, and the United States has room for them within their refugee numbers, they can fly to the United States and be accepted without going through the asylum process. My understanding is that's what the intention of these new processing centers will be. It will allow people to apply to meet the definition of a refugee there, and then not have to take the dangerous journey across Central America and Mexico to seek asylum, but they would go through the processing outside of the U.S., which potentially could be a much safer way to seek protection and permanent status in the U.S., but they're not up and running yet.
From your perspective with the Immigrant Justice Clinic, what things do you think would help in terms of processing asylum claims quickly and fairly at the border?
That's a good question. And, you know, I think having humanitarian government policies in line where we can provide safe shelter, ability for people to sleep and eat food before they're interviewed by an asylum officer who is well trained in trauma as well as country conditions. The asylum system is incredibly backlogged. And so when someone goes into the court system, they're going to be waiting for years. Sometimes if they're in detention, it will go faster, but the trauma of being in detention is really pretty difficult. So we need better policies and procedures for processing people in a more humane manner.
And briefly, this is a part of your work. How about access to legal counsel for people seeking asylum?
Yes, that's super important. As many people know, if you're in the immigration, if you're in removal proceedings and applying for asylum, you can have an attorney represent you, but you have to be able to pay for them or find a pro bono attorney to represent you. There's simply not enough resources for people to be represented in these proceedings if they have to afford an attorney, which is thousands of dollars, which many people don't have when they arrive to the U.S. And you are much more likely to be successful and receive access to justice if you're represented by an attorney who is well-versed in the asylum law.
Erin, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Erin Barbato, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. She joined us today to explain U.S. immigration policy, especially asylum status, now that Title 42 has expired, and how new policies are affecting immigration on the U.S.-Mexico border.